Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
These former companions of his had taken over his dawah exactly as he had prophesied. And now the real Ahmed al-Hassan comes back and he begins to expose them through this group of true believers that he sends forward. And in addition to that, he decides to test all of the believers by sending forward his successor with the same proofs that he had.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد إلى إمام المهدينا وسلم تسليما السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته Father.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So Tiffany, today we're going to continue in our talk about the history of the Yamani Dawah.
Okay.
In the last episode we spoke about Ahmed al-Hassan, Ahmed son of Ismail, and how he had this dream and he actually followed the dream and he met Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam in this physical world. And Imam al-Mahdi enlightened him, informed him of who he was, and that he was the successor to Imam al-Mahdi. He was the companion of the will. His name, Ahmed, was written in the will that the Prophet Muhammad wrote on his deathbed. And he gave him the task of, basically calling people towards the supremacy of God and fixing what has gone wrong amongst the scholars and the students of religion in the Hawza, which was considered to be the kind of like final fortress which preserved and taught and propagated the narrations and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. And Ahmed al-Hassan alayhi salam, he did so from 1999 all the way until 2007, as we had mentioned previously. And in 2007, I had mentioned he went into an absence.
Yes.
He disappeared. And the reason specifically why he disappeared is because he was becoming a threat to the scholars of religion. They were calling towards elections, and he was calling towards the supremacy of God and saying, no, that the Muslims have to only follow Imam Mahdi, alayhi salam. The scholars rejected the fact that that this man would be a representative or a messenger from Imam Mahdi, and they were growing more and more fearful of his growing influence on the Iraqi scene and the growing numbers and followers of his. The majority of the Iraqi population followed these marjas, or these grand ayatollahs, as they would say in English, ayatollah. The greater sign of God. It's a title that they would give to the scholars. So the main scholar, the big scholar, the one that they, every Shia Muslim, they're taught anyway by the scholars that they have to make imitation of, or they have to be a follower of one of these like ultimate scholars. This process is called taqlid. And so in Iraq, the majority of the Shia, they follow their grand marja, their grand ayatollah, who's considered to be kind of like the equivalent of the Pope in Catholicism. In Shia Islam, they have many of them.
Yeah.
Each one of these popes, or ayatollahs, they have behind them a large following of people. And they are considered to be, in many ways, the door to Imam al-Mahdi, the representative of Imam al-Mahdi in his absence. And so Ahmed al-Hassan, claiming to be a representative of Imam al-Mahdi, strips away the power from these scholars and these individuals. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So eventually what happens is they start issuing fatwas against him, fatwas that he is a dajjal, that he's a liar, fatwas that his blood is halal, that it's okay to kill him, and attack his followers, that you know, and accusing them of all kinds of things. One of the great kind of disasters that took place in the Yemeni Dawah was that in 2007, there was this shooting that took place between what they called at the time an armed militia and between the government, the police forces. And at that time, in the news media, they came out and they said that Ahmed al-Hassan and his followers were responsible for this, and that they were terrorists, etc. And basically, the government, alongside with the American forces and UK forces, they bombed the you know, the compound or the area where the people were, that were firing back and forth with the police, and they massacred a lot of people. And in the news outlets, it was said that these were the followers of Ahmed al-Hassan the Yemeni. This statement later was to be retracted from the government, and they actually said that Ahmed al-Hassan and his followers have nothing to do with this group, that this was a whole different group that had led the uprising, and that the leader of that group was killed, and that it was a done deal, and this sect or this group went extinct.
Okay.
So initially they say that Ahmed Hassan's responsible, and then they eventually retract that statement and say actually he's not responsible, and him and his followers had nothing to do with that. All right. But between the time that they issued the statement and they retracted the statement, Ahmed Hassan's life was in so much danger, and he was in danger of going to prison. And this was something actually that he had predicted in one of his speeches, where he said that he was going to be leaving, he's going to be migrating from Iraq because the people there had intended to kill him or imprison him, and that he would not come back until he comes back with you know, Imam al-Mahdi, Muhammad ibn Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Okay?
Yeah.
So that was the prediction that he made in his speech. And then he was accused of these crimes. And then basically his life was on the line. And then he went into in absence. Okay?
Okay.
Now, this is where the story gets really, really interesting, and it becomes very mysterious. It's the mysterious case of the Yemeni Dawah.
Okay.
What happens is that after he disappears, the government allows that the Yemeni Dawah operate legally within the country.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, the dawah that at first was seen as a threat to the marjas and to the scholars, and they were against it, was now allowed to open up offices and operate freely. And they even had a newspaper that they were passing out legally within the country. And they also were able to print and pass out books that were attributed to Ahmed al-Hassan. Except that Ahmed al-Hassan himself still remained in hiding. He was still not seen sitting in his offices, passing out his own pamphlets, preaching in his own, you know, masjid or his own, you know, gatherings or Husayniyas. The man remained in hiding, but all of his companions were able to, you know, operate the dawah and buy these big buildings and basically operate freely without fear of being attacked by the police or being arrested.
Okay, that's a strange turn of events.
It is a very strange turn of events. Like, so the dawah itself, eventually it becomes, you know, there emerge these new faces to the dawah. These three individuals that control it from top to bottom. And they're appearing in the pictures, the official pictures, they're writing books in the name of the dawah. They're the ones that are actually reviewing and editing also
The books and the works of Ahmed al-Hassan, and they're considered to be these doors to him,
okay.
Right? And these guys that are, they would basically take, they were allegedly in contact with Ahmed al-Hassan, and the followers of Ahmed al-Hassan now, they have no contact with Ahmed al-Hassan, so the only way that they can communicate with him becomes through these individuals.
Okay.
One of them, his name is Nazim al-Aqili. Another one, his name is Ala al-Salim. Mm-hmm. And a third one, his name is Hassan al-Hamami. Okay? Now, Hassan al-Hamami, what's interesting about him is that during the events, these events in 2007, he was actually arrested when they were looking for Ahmed Hassan and his followers and accusing them of being involved in this. They actually arrested Hassan al-Hamami, and Hassan al-Hamami declares himself innocent of Ahmed al-Hassan and says that they are a false group, a group that is astray.
Wow.
Yeah. And he condemns the Dawah, and there's video footage of this that ended up coming out on the news and being available, right?
Wow.
And so the guy who declares himself innocent of the Dawah, all of a sudden now, in the absence of Ahmed al-Hassan, becomes the main sheikh of the Dawah, or one of the three main sheikhs of the Dawah, and one of the people that are controlling the wealth and the call of the Imani Ahmed Hassan Isa.
Okay. That's rather bizarre.
It is bizarre. Now, Ahmed Hassan, he ends up releasing, okay, four speeches while he's on the ground physically amongst the people.
Yeah.
And we mentioned these speeches mm-hmm. in the last episode. After a while in the Dawah, people began to grow doubtful. They're like, where is Ahmed Hassan? Why is the office operating? Why is he not allowed to be here if his office is allowed to be here and his Dawah is allowed to be propagated here? So they began to ask questions, and this resulted in the office of the Dawah releasing a speech, which was called the Speech of Muharram, which was an additional fifth speech to Ahmed al-Hassan. Right,
yes.
Allegedly to Ahmed mm-hmm. Hassan, and they published it, but it was only an audio recording.
Okay.
And after that, they ended up also opening up for him a Facebook page,
yes.
And they made all of the followers like sign up for Facebook and subscribe to the Facebook page, whereby he could communicate directly with his followers on social media. And they would also be able to send in questions and answers and all of that. And on the Facebook page as well, he released a couple of audio recordings of his where he's delivering these audio messages.
Yes.
So now the office had hoped that this would basically eliminate any doubts about Ahmed al-Hassan being with him, because essentially the people began to doubt, and they were saying that, you know, what if Ahmed al-Hassan is not with you guys and that you guys are basically just using his name? He's in an absence and you guys in his absence are using his name to make money and control, you know, his call. Which was a legitimate concern, right?
Yeah.
And because when Ahmed al-Hassan left and he made his speech saying that he was going to migrate, he said that he wouldn't be back except with Muhammad ibn Hassan, that they wouldn't see him again. And he didn't mention in there that he was going to have any representatives, or if he was going to open up any offices or.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's important to take his words into account. Like he would have, you know, we would think that he would have indicated that there would be somebody to go to in his absence if that were the case.
Mm-hmm. Followers of the Dawah now began to point out the fact that his voice in the recordings on the Facebook and also in the speech of Muharram sounded nothing like his voice in the four previous speeches.
Yeah.
And so it had kind of a double effect, these recordings. It cemented the faith of those who believed in the companions of Ahmed al-Hassan, Nazim, Ala, and Hassan Hamami, which, by the way, alayhi salam, he never physically met Ahmed al-Hassan, alayhi salam. He came after Ahmed al-Hassan's absence.
Okay.
So these individuals, the recordings cemented for certain believers their faith that Ahmed al-Hassan is with this dawah.
Yes.
And with the office.
Mm-hmm.
For others, though, these recordings confirmed what they had long suspected, and that Ahmed al-Hassan is not with this call.
Yeah.
But in the absence of anywhere else to go, they continued to fight against their doubts in the call, and they remained silent, watching, wondering, why is his voice so different? Could it be that he just aged and his voice changed, or what is the reason? But they were doubtful, you know, or they were altogether not buying it, but they didn't say anything about it, yeah. Right? Except to one another, they would voice these doubts and concerns. And so now Ahmed al-Hassan, he's absent, and the believers are splitting into two groups.
Yes.
The office released a lot of books in print, right, and mm-hmm. in PDF form and on the website that were all attributed to Ahmed al-Hassan. But there was one book in particular that became the central book that would be at the center of the division of the followers of Ahmed al-Hassan and be at the center of this conspiracy that was gaining momentum, that the office was taking over the dawah of Ahmed al-Hassan and that, like, he was actually not with them. And that was a book that was titled The Kaf. It was a book that Ahmed al-Hassan alayhi salam had wrote and had distributed, right, amongst the students of the Hawza back at the very beginning of his dawah, okay?
Okay.
And this book was essentially speaking about how, it spoke about many things, but it was really talking about how in every call of every messenger, the divine call is attacked on two fronts. It is attacked from the outside by the disbelievers, and it was attacked on the inside by the hypocrites.
Okay.
It was attacked on the outside by Pontius Pilate, and it was attacked on the inside by Judas Iscariot, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's attacked on the outside by Pharaoh. It's attacked on the inside by the Samari. It's attacked on the outside by the enemies of Rasulullah, and it's attacked Abu Lahab, Abu Sufyan, these guys. It's attacked on the inside by Abu Bakr and Umar and Uthman, right?
Yeah.
And so it was titled The Calf after the golden calf that was worshipped by the Israelites.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
During the absence of Moses.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, during his absence.
So this book became like this prophecy that the believers didn't understand until Ahmed al-Hassan went into an absence. And in his absence, they said, oh my God, he was telling us all along and warning us of what would happen in his absence, because the book was focused around this. And there were many comparisons that were drawn in the book between Moses and the Samari and the worship of the calf, and between the dawah of Imam Mahdi, which he himself is at the center of.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I mean, even just thinking about how some time had to pass before people started to have their doubts about whether Ahmed al-Hassan was actually with the office, and that was something that also happened in the story of Moses. Like, they expected him back after a certain amount of time, and then when the time extended, people started to get antsy, and they built this golden calf, and yeah, that they started to worship it.
And so the book, it mentions that Moses, you know, he's propagating his faith, and that there is, you know, this guy who's mentioned in the Quran in the verse which says, you know, and one of his Shia sought help from him.
And Ahmed Hassan says in the book that there are narrations that identify this Shia who seeks help from Moses, right, before his killing of the Egyptian, as being the Samiri. Okay?
Okay.
So the story goes, when you look at the narrations from Islam, and also when you look at the narrations that exist in Judaism, is that Moses is passing by, and there is this man who is seeking help from Moses. And he's seeking help from Moses because now he's in a fight with. So Ahmed Hassan says he is a mujahid. He's somebody who's fighting against Pharaoh and his soldiers. Why is he fighting against Pharaoh? Well, the Jewish narrations state that this guy was an Israelite guy. And Pharaoh's soldiers had went into his house. And they basically proceeded to rape his wife in front of his own eyes. Right?
Okay.
And so the man struggles against the soldier of Pharaoh when Moses passes by, and he shouts out for help. And, you know, he informs him of what happened, and Moses becomes extremely angered. You know, sometimes it's post-fact, sometimes it's during the event himself. But anyway, Moses, he finds out about what happens. He gets very angry. He decides to assassinate this soldier that the man was struggling against and who had raped his wife. Now, yeah. The man, according to the calf, is the Samiri, right?
Wow.
And the Samiri, he's a believer. He's one of the close companions. He's a Shia, right,
mm-hmm.
of Moses. And he's also brave enough to struggle against the tyrant. And he has this kind of reputation amongst the people. And then you fast forward to later on, and what happens is that this man sees himself as better than Moses.
Yeah.
And he takes advantage of the fact that Moses had to leave for 30 days, which ends up being 40 days and
yes.
40 nights, right?
Yeah.
To meet God and see what's going on with the burning bush.
Mm-hmm.
And he begins to call the people towards the worship of the calf.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Ahmed Hassan, he writes in the book basically that, and the Samiri has to exist in every dawah, right? So now this Samiri character, who is a Shia, a close companion, who leads the Israelites, the believers, astray, and takes advantage of the absence of Moses, a similar character and a similar event has to take place in this dawah, because the imam is saying that he has to exist in every dawah,
yeah.
right? And so now the believers are drawing parallels, and they're saying, okay, well, Moses was absent. Now Ahmed Hassan's absent. What happened in the story of the calf is that the story of the calf, they built this calf, and the calf actually made a sound.
Yes.
And so they're like, oh my God. And now the companions, they built this office and this empire of the dawah, right?
Yeah.
And they have this Facebook page that has this audio, this
yes,
sound.
Yes, it made a voice.
This voice, yeah. right? Which we're commanded to follow, right? And to follow and to obey, the voice means to worship, right?
Right.
And so they're worshiping this voice, just like the Israelites were worshiping the calf because of the voice that it made during the absence of Moses. So the parallels are extremely strong.
Yeah.
Right?
They're so precise.
They're yeah. extremely precise. And, people are very much in doubt.
Yeah.
Now, this is all taking place, right? And at a time where Ahmed al-Hassan ends up being this group of people that are anonymous within the call that end up posting out there that Ahmed al-Hassan, the real Ahmed al-Hassan, is back.
Yeah.
And that there is somebody who basically took over his, dawah and his personality, and they start to confirm that this conspiracy took place in the absence of Ahmed al-Hassan.
Yeah.
And they offer a few proofs to the people that the real Ahmed Hassan is with them instead of with the office. And the proofs that they offer are as such. They bring forward a narration, and that is the narration of the death of King Abdullah. And the narration states, and we've mentioned this in other episodes, that there shall rule a man, Al-Hijaz, whose name is the name of an animal. He will be succeeded by a brother whose name is Abdullah. Give me glad tidings of his death, and I will give you glad tidings of the appearance of the Hajj. And so they say that this narration promises that when King Abdullah dies, the Hajjah will appear. And if you believe in the promise of the Prophet of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, then you will believe that Ahmed Hassan's with us. Because Ahmed Hassan said that he would reappear with his father, Muhammad ibn Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam. And this narration is saying that on the time of the death of King Abdullah, once King Abdullah dies, Muhammad ibn Hassan, the Hajjah, will appear. And so the Imam promised he would appear with Muhammad ibn Hassan. The narration says that Muhammad ibn Hassan will appear when King Abdullah dies. Therefore, Muhammad ibn Hassan has appeared, and he has with him now Ahmed al-Hassan, and they both sent us forward. We are a group of believers that actually met with him, saw him, were instructed by him, and sent forward by him to tell the believers that that he's back and that he's reclaiming his da'wah, and that the people you know, who are operating or behind the voice now are fraudsters. And they challenged the office that if they did have Ahmed Hassan alayhi salam with them, that let him come out and prove it. Let the man appear in audio and video, and show the world that he actually is with them. And this challenge was met with a fatwa to ignore all of the you know, people that were propagating this idea. And it was met with them now belying and going back on belief and in this particular narration that they had once propagated before, which was the narration about the death of King Abdullah, and interpreting it in a different way. Before, they and all of the Shia world were saying that Imam al-Mahdi will come right when King Abdullah dies. Now they had a different tone, and they were saying, well, maybe the narration is false. Maybe he's going to appear in the future. It doesn't say exactly when he's going to appear. Maybe he's going to be years later or something of the sort.
Because it became a proof against them. Of course. And I know that that this had been a narration that they had been talking about, and that they had been essentially confirming. And then when it actually came to pass and it became a proof against them, then they started to deny the hadith altogether.
And so now it became a very big problem, and all of the followers of Ahmed Hassan, they fell into doubt. Nobody knows now where is the true Ahmed Hassan.
Such a time of confusion.
It was a time of confusion. Now here you have the office. The office has a white banner that's written in it, allegiance is to God. And you have now this new group of people, you know, and they have the narration of the death of King Abdullah with them. They have this logical argument behind them. You know, they have, you know, this claim that Ahmed Hassan is with them, and that the other people are false, and they're challenging them to prove it, and they're challenging the office to a mubahala, you know, to that they meet and they call down the curse of God upon the liars, and the office is not responding to it, right? And now it is craziness.
Telling everyone not to look at it, not to look into it. They're liars, and
So then what happens is that now you have the white banners and now you have the black banners. Ahmed al-Hassan sends forward his successor, to appear publicly on the ground to test his followers in the same way that Muhammad ibn Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam tested his Shia by sending forward Ahmad al-Hassan.
Yes.
In the beginning of the da'wah of Ahmad al-Hassan, even though it was a da'wah to call to Imam al-Mahdi and proclaim that Imam al-Mahdi now has appeared, Imam al-Mahdi himself did not appear publicly amongst the people.
Yes.
Rather, he sent forward his messenger. And he sent the messenger forward with a clear proof, and the clear proof was the will, yes, which he had claimed, right? Mm-hmm. Because nobody claims this matter, falsely, except that God cuts off their life. This, yes, is what the narration state. And also the Prophet Muhammad said when he wrote the will that whoever holds on to the will, it would be a protection against misguidance. They would never go astray. It was a divine promise that you hold on to the will. And this is the basis that all of the followers of Ahmad al-Hassan accepted his claim unanimously, because of the legitimacy, the heaviness, the weightiness of the will of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that whoever claims to be Ahmad in the will, and nobody else had ever claimed to be Ahmad in the will, the successor of Imam al-Mahdi, except for Ahmad al-Hassan.
Yes.
And so this, and the raising of the banner that's written on it, al-Bay'a lillah, because it's also mentioned in narrations that the Mahdi's banner will have written in it, al-Bay'a lillah, or allegiances to God. And nobody else, no other Mahdi claimant throughout history, from the time of the Prophet all the way till today, ever came with a banner that was written on it, allegiances to God. So the will, plus that, plus the knowledge of Ahmad al-Hassan alayhi salam, it became this proof, this law that could not be broken or argued against, that proved that Ahmad al-Hassan was who he said he was.
Yes.
All right? Mm-hmm. So they didn't believe in Ahmad al-Hassan's claim based on the fact that they met Muhammad ibn Hassan al-Askari or Imam al-Mahdi, but just on the basis of these proofs that he came with.
Yeah.
Ahmad al-Hassan then decided, because he had come back from his absence and he had found that these former companions of his had taken over his da'wah exactly as he had prophesied. Mm. And now they are using as a proof to convince the Israelites or the Shia or the followers of Ahmad al-Hassan that they are the true path, and that the people have an obligation to follow them because they have provided this voice of Ahmad al-Hassan. The real Ahmad al-Hassan comes back and he begins to expose them through this group of true believers that he sends forward. And in addition to that, he decides to test all of the believers by sending forward his successor with the same proofs that he had.
Yeah.
So he said, okay, if you guys are true believers in me, then let's see if you believe my messenger, who I send forward to you with exactly the same proofs as I came with, coming to you in exactly the same manner as I came to you. And so he sends forward a man who raises the banner, al-Bay'a lillah, allegiances to God, the black banner, which was mentioned in hadiths that the Mahdi's banner will be written in the al-Bay'a lillah and the Mahdi's banner would be black. So
yeah,
he sends him forward carrying that banner. He sends him forward with knowledge, and all of those who met him and believed in him and didn't believe in him also testified to the fact that this messenger of his was extremely knowledgeable. And he also sent him forward to claim the will and say that I am Abdullah, who is in the will of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
Yeah.
So he comes forward exactly as Ahmad al-Hassan alayhi salam came forward with, and the believers became in this, this very big test where they had to choose whether to follow the voice, which they don't know really, it sounds differently, and they have no way of identifying if it belongs to Ahmad al-Hassan or not. And during that time period, there are many people that it's known that many people, work in the business of imitating other people's voices. And in today's world, you have artificial intelligence that is able to produce and take and make the voice of any individual say anything essentially that they want them to say.
Yes.
Right. So they have the choice between believing in the physical, believing in the sound, right, that comes, and believing in the office, and believing in the companions of Ahmed Hassan, or believing in the proofs of the Dawah of Ahmed Hassan. Which was the will and the knowledge and the banner.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So it became a contest of what do you believe in? Do you believe in the will or you don't believe in the will? This is essentially what it all came down to.
Right. If you believe in the will in this instance, then you have to believe in the will in this instance.
Exactly. And
yeah, it forces people to question their beliefs for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this happened in 2015.
Yes.
And so in 2015, from the year 2015 till today, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024. 9 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
9 years.
In those 9 years, the call of Ahmed Hassan has been out there in two different sects. There's the office, which is still operating till today, and they never came forward in these 9 years with Ahmed al-Hassan's audio, video, or him coming out in public to say, I really am with the office and this other person and this other call that is claiming that I'm with them, I'm not really with them. So he never comes out with his physical appearance, in his flesh, in his blood, to deny that he is with the Black Banner group.
Okay.
And the Black Banner group also continues to propagate the call, and many people from all over the world believe in it, believing in the evidences and believing in the will, and pledging allegiance to the companion of the will, Abdullah, and taking him as an imam in the same way that the believers had taken the Ahmed Hassan alayhi salam as an imam.
Yes.
God bless you, Tiffany.
God bless you. Thank you so much for talking to me today.